Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 21st of May, Anno Domini 2016. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. This week, Google held its annual developers conference called Google I.O. Lots of nifty stuff was announced. We'll try to give you some idea of what the high points were. Mobile apps often provide a better user experience than browser-based web apps. But first, you have to find them, download them, then try not to forget you install them. Now, Google wants to rethink what mobile apps are and how we interact with them. Instant apps are designed to bridge this gap between mobile apps and web apps by allowing you to use native apps almost instantly, even when you haven't previously installed them, simply by tapping on a URL. Typically, downloading and installing an app will take a while, but with instant apps, developers will have to partition their apps into small, runnable parts that can start within a few seconds. Not sure how useful that is. You still have to find the apps after all, but it's a nice idea. Google announced a new messaging app called Allo, A-L-L-O, and a new video messaging app called Duo. Both apps are based on your phone number and are focused on bringing more information to users as they're typing or about to pick up the phone. Allo's claim to fame is that Assistant is built into Allo so that you as you exchange information with someone else, the app can offer auto replies even based on photos. It can see if you're thinking of getting Italian food for dinner and suggest nearby restaurants, stuff like that. Duo, on the other hand, will be based on one-to-one video messaging, again, using your phone number. Think FaceTime. Duo also supports end-to-end encryption and works on both Android and iOS. The end-to-end encryption is not default, but it's in there. The app also comes with an interesting feature called Knock Knock. Who's there? Which shows you video of the caller before you even pick up. So you can look at it and see, oh, yeah, I don't want to talk to them. Duo is supposed to work in low bandwidth situations to minimize video lag frustration. Google is also launching a smart personal assistant called Google Home that uses artificial intelligence and search to let people not just get the answers to their questions, but even to control their devices. Think Amazon Echo or Alexa, if you've been calling it that. Included is the conversational Google Assistant. Google wants users to be able to do more than ask Google Assistant what the weather will be that day. You can ask it any question you could ask Google. You can throw video to a Chromecast-enabled TV. Google Home will even sync with Chromecast, other Google Homes, and other devices in your house to provide stereo sound or multi-room party music. The big thing, of course, is that Google Home will understand context. You can stop now. Besides, that's house music, not party music. Okay. When you ask Alexa to turn down the temperature, it will ask which thermostat. Google Home will already know. You can also personalize the design of Google Home with different colors and materials. Google also announced that Android apps will run on the next version of Chrome OS, but you'll need a newer Chromebook to run them. Certainly newer than all the ones I have. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google shows lots of new stuff. And your choices are, I'm very excited, I'm sort of excited, meh, and who cares. So far we've got 21 votes. I'm sort of excited and meh are tied for first. Well, it's 6-6-5-4, so it's I'm sort of excited, meh. Who cares? And I'm very excited. So
yeah, the results are...
Get your votes in.
Yeah.
And then when you're done with that, I know you'll have more to say. So if you scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, the first link there is the forums. And the second forum down is the poll discussion. Right now, at least, the first item under poll discussion is 21 May 16, Google shows lots of new stuff, and nobody's even stuck anything there. Come on, all the people listening to the show who come to Rochester Googles every month. Let's get some votes and some talking going on in there.
It's almost a nice day. They might be outside.
Right, and of course, it's almost a nice day. For Rochester, this is a very nice day.
Yeah, it's not too hot.
Right, right.
It's
going to rain, but we have discovered, many Rochesterians have discovered that the human body is waterproof.
Really?
Yeah, I know not everybody knows that, but it's true. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. It's interesting what they're doing. I like the idea of aloe if it can indeed make it be end-to-end encrypted.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean that Vera is coming soon?
Yeah, aloe and Vera. Vera. Yeah, it's A-L-L-O as in aloe.
Hello.
And I like the idea of Duo. It works. Thank you. Thank you very much. It works both on Android and iOS, which I know for the longest time FaceTime didn't. Does it now?
No. Apple said they would open source the underlying protocols.
They haven't done yet.
So that anyone could make a FaceTime client.
Right.
Yeah, they haven't, and so no one has.
Well,
at this point, they probably don't need to with a billion iOS devices in
right,
the world.
Right.
Yeah.
And everyone else uses Skype.
And everyone else uses Skype. Well, now hopefully many of them for one-to-one communication will use Allo, and then Duo, and then for multi-use thing, they still have, of course, Hangouts. And so it should be interesting to see where that goes in the future. You cannot get them yet, but you can pre-order them. You can reserve your copy by going to the Google Play Store, not the Android Store. I found them in the actual Google Play Store. So if you go there and search for Allo, A-L-L-O, make sure you get the one that says Google Inc. And then Duo, the same thing, make sure you get the one that says Google Inc. You can reserve your copies, and then at some point over the summer, you'll get a notice on your phone that they're ready to download. So
interesting.
Yeah, it should be pretty cool. And then, of course, it'll also show up in the Apple Store. So that should be kind of fun. I like the idea of Google Home. I liked the idea of Alexa, or Amazon Echo, rather. I liked that idea. I like the idea of Google Home. I like very much the idea that I can use Chromecast with Google Home. So, you know, I can say to Google Home, throw this up on my TV.
We're continually amazed that Apple hasn't added that, you know, Echo-type feature to the Apple TV. And maybe they will this June at the developer conference.
Right.
So it's always listening. And although with the Apple TV, Siri's in the remote, and so you have to push the button in the remote, which addresses some of the security concerns where the Echo is always listening to everything you say, waiting for a keyword. So theoretically, someone could give Amazon a security letter saying, you know, turn the speaker on and listen to everything he says.
Hmm. Right. Same will be true for Google Home, of course.
Yeah. Yep.
And Android did make one big mistake recently. The next version of Android will start with an N. They've been desserts that start with each letter of the alphabet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Eclair, donut, and eclair, and froyo, and whatever they all were. And we're up to L right now. We're up to M right now, marzipan. So we've got N coming next.
Desserts that start with an N is a frequent Google search.
The problem here is that Google has been asking people to suggest
names,
N words.
Yeah.
Hmm.
This is the internet.
Yeah.
You can imagine some of the answers they've been getting.
Yeah.
Some folks with no filters.
Yeah.
They
could go back with their product placement and call it Nerds and get some money from whoever owns the Nerds candy.
Or they pay money to Willy Wonka, which Nougat. I think is Nestle. Yeah.
No one knows what Nougat actually is.
Right.
But it's in our candy bars.
It's in our candy bars, and that's what counts.
Nut Roll. Nutella, if you're...
Nutella, they'll have to pay for that.
Yeah.
Nougat, they wouldn't have to pay for. Nestle, they'd have to pay for.
Napoleon.
Nougat would be good.
Would work.
Noodle pudding.
No, I don't even care what it is. I don't even like the look of that. Take that off your screen right now.
That's from India. Noodles swimming in a sea of milk and vanilla topped with raisins and nuts.
Didn't I just say take that off your screen? Exactly. Yeah. I'm sure if you grew up with it, it's unbelievably tasty.
Here's the Australian Neenish tart.
The Neenish tart is essentially a moon pie with some odd filling in it. I forget what that is.
Nanavat from Limburg.
Yeah.
Loosely translates to nun's butt.
Thanks for sharing that.
Another product placement. Yeah, so which one do I want to go? Other.
Nougat.
Nougat. I'd go for nougat, absolutely. It's the one they don't have to pay for.
Yeah. Why?
All right, let's get to the phones. Our first caller is Alan from Webster, New York. Hi, Alan, what's up?
And Alan, I have to apologize because every time he kept saying where he was from,
it was like
you were talking loud, Nick.
Oh, sorry.
It was like, I couldn't hear.
Okay, right. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have two questions. I got the infamous, you're going over to Windows 10 note the other day. So I'm backing up Windows 7. I'm running a Hewlett-Packard desktop with an AMD processor, and it's Windows Home Premium 64. And when I went to, backed up all my files manually to two separate Western Digital external hard drives, USB 3.0, one's a 4 and one's a 6 terabyte. Yep. And when I did the Windows backup, it said it failed and gave me an error, an input-output error, device error.
Yep.
Then what I did was I went and I looked at the backup, and I started to restore from there, and I could see all the files and folders. Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, the problem is this. You cannot back up open files under Windows.
Okay.
And Windows opens many, you know, when you're running Windows, when you boot up Windows, it opens many files and leaves them open.
Okay.
So there is no way to manually back up an entire Windows drive, including the operating system. You can certainly back up all your documents if you close everything,
right?
And leave out the temp directories because they often have open files from Windows in them. If you leave those out, you can back up all of your files, but you cannot back up the operating system. What you need is a program like Clonezilla, which actually you boot from that, so Windows is not running.
Okay,
and then that will do it for you. But you cannot back up a running Windows system. That's why I tell people most of the time what you want to do is back up your documents because that's fast and convenient. But when you want to back up your operating system, you have to shut down Windows, boot something else like Clonezilla off a CD, which is slow but works, right? And then do the cloning from that. So. That's what I recommend in this case as well.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go to Windows 10 another couple days, right? So I backed up all my documents, my pictures, everything like that.
Right.
Do I really need to back up Windows 7?
No. In fact, no. Yeah. I wouldn't bother, frankly. Yeah.
Unless something critical goes wrong, then you're going to have to erase the hard drive and reinstall Windows again.
The one thing that I have always said, and it's been true with any operating system, just worry about, you know, backing up, say, your bookmarks, your documents, your photos, and all that type of stuff. Because if this gets messed up, you know, in the changing and everything else, you want to go back to Windows 7, you're going to want Windows 7 fresh anyways.
Yep.
And then you can turn around and restore, you know, the documents, the bookmarks, and everything else.
Yep.
Right. In addition to that, one thing I might suggest, preparatory, right? Download Windows 10.
Yeah.
From Microsoft's website.
As an ISO that you can then save on another disk.
Right, that you can burn to a CD, actually a DVD. You can burn it to a DVD, and then if there is a problem with the install, or even if you just feel like doing it this way, you can just wipe out your hard drive, make sure you've got good backups of your documents, make sure that the DVD that you create from the Windows download is good, and then wipe out your machine and install it fresh.
Okay.
You know, you want to have your Windows 7 serial number. which should be on the machine somewhere on a holographic sticker or on the CD that came with it if you installed it from a CD.
No, it came pre-installed. Yeah. Hewlett Packard does that, and I had to burn some restore disks from it or recovery disks.
Right. So get your serial number, write that down so you have that. Okay. You know, get all your little ducks in a row and then go for it.
Right. I have another question. Can I ask it?
You're gonna hold on. Yeah, we got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Alan from Webster, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Alan from Webster still on the line. Hi, Alan. What's your other question?
Hi. I use Windows Live Mail as my mail system.
Sure.
And I can look up how to back that up. But when it goes to Windows 10, I think there's a new mail client that they're using. Will that go over to there, or do I have to do something manually to take my old emails?
Well, let me ask you a question. If you're on Windows Live Mail, are you downloading all your mail, or is it still up on the server?
Mail.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I know you don't like that.
Yeah, no.
It makes it harder to move to another computer.
Yeah. What you'll have to do is export all of your mail.
Okay.
I honestly do not know at this moment if it will move. You can still use Windows Live Mail in Windows 10.
Right.
So theoretically, if you just do an upgrade, it should all still be there. But you do want to do, you can go into Windows Mail and back up all your mail. And right. That way, if you have an issue, you've got that separate on a disk or a flash drive or whatever. And
external
drive,
I'm using.
Yeah, right. And then you can put that back. So I would suggest doing that.
Okay.
You re-import it, export it, and if you need to, you can re-import it.
Import it, right. All right, well, thanks for your advice.
Yep, good luck.
Thanks.
That's one thing a lot of people forget is backing up their mail, because the Mac and Windows, it's in an invisible folder.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you just click Documents, it won't get your mail.
Yeah.
You have to click your user account, and then it will get all the invisible stuff.
Right, and don't forget your contacts and your calendars.
Yep.
Yep.
People forget. Mm-hmm. Email is just email. It's not the contacts.
And also in your browser, the bookmarks. If you've got a lot of bookmarks that you really go to a lot, you also want to back those up. You can export it all.
Right. All of that is exportable. Exportable, yeah. But you have to do it.
What I usually like to do is when I'm exporting stuff, just so I can find it a lot easier, I have it set to export it to the desktop. Even when I do downloads, I put download to my desktop. It's right there in my face. And then I can decide where I want to put that particular file or backups.
Right.
And it's just easier to work with than trying to, all right, click on my computer, go to the download folder. Hopefully it's there. And some programs put it within their own folder. So I say the heck with it. And when it comes to backing up, most programs will allow you to decide where you want to back it up to.
Right.
And just point it to your desktop. Easy to do. And then remember
to back it up off the machine from that desktop.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you have a million things on your desktop and can't find any of them.
Well, the secret there in general is make folders.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can only have so many items on your desktop before your Windows. I don't care how much RAM you have. The stuff on the desktop, the icons on the desktop, go into a space called the heap space. And I don't care how much RAM you have a limited amount of heap space.
Yeah.
So the more icons you have, the less heap space you have, the slower Windows runs, blah, blah, blah. And eventually it stops.
Oh.
So, but if you put things in a folder, then they only go into the heap space when you open that folder.
I had one computer come in, and he had it on a 21-inch monitor.
Yeah.
There was, they were literally side by side.
Yep.
And a lot of more of these DAC files. And the thing was slow as all get out.
Yep.
So, and then on your 15-inch service monitor, they're all piled on top of each other.
Yeah, so I grabbed all the doc files, created one folder, and said, Documents.
Duh.
Dumped them right in there. So when he came to me, I said, well, I got it sped up for you.
Yeah.
And then I opened, got it up and running for him. He goes, where's all my documents? I said, right here in this folder. Well, how's that going to work? I says, well, when you want one, you click on the folder, boom, it opens up. There's all you do. Oh, that's kind of easy.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. And boom, you close it down. They're not taking up all the space and trying to. All right, I guess I can live with that. And I says, well, it's going to run a lot faster. Well, that's what I want then.
We had a customer a couple of weeks ago.
Bad.
Migrating from Windows to Mac. And
sorry.
When she ran the migration, she couldn't find the documents she migrated. So I said, well, they're in your documents folder. Oh, no, I don't use the documents folder. That's Microsoft simple stuff. I don't want to use that. Oh.
Okay.
Okay. So where were they? In a folder at the root of the hard drive.
Of course they were.
At least they were in a folder at the root of the hard drive and not all at the root of the hard drive.
Right. Because that's the other thing. You can only have so many files at the root of the hard drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's 1023.
But you can have plenty of them into
that. You can have millions underneath that folders.
Yeah. It used to be 128. We run into that in some flash drives in the in the FAT16 file system. Mm-hmm. So you get like an 8 gig flash drive. It may be formatted in FAT16. You can only put 128 files at the root of the drive. And then it says it's full. Even if it isn't full, the drive isn't full, the directory allocation is full.
Right.
Yeah, and just create one folder, say documents.
And then put 1,000 files in it.
Yeah, underneath that you can have
all the files you can fit.
Other folders within that.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
And we used to say, we're getting away from some of this now because computers have been so ubiquitous for the last 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the filing cabinet in your office. You want to make your drawers.
Organized.
And in the drawers, you have your folders. And in your folders, you might have subfolders.
But people don't think that way often enough. That's one of the reasons that Google Drive is so nice because, well, they're Google.
Yeah.
Which means you can just search for a word. So if I've got a list of all my hardware, right, in a file, in a folder, in a document, rather, I can just, in the search box, say hardware, and up comes, Nick's hardware, and I can look at, I can just double click on
that. Computers are fast enough to do that search reasonably fast. I remember reading a columnist years ago, and Apple introduced this feature called Spotlight like 10 years ago that was a global search. It just took forever.
Right.
But it was so convenient to have a global search. He said, it's the end of folders. You don't need to make folders anymore, just global search.
Yeah, it's been around forever in Linux, but the same problem. It ran in the background so hard.
That to index.
Right. That it slowed the machine down terribly.
Yeah.
So most people turned it off. Having it on is very convenient. And nowadays, you know, if you can just say, use one of my multiple processors.
Yep. And people don't look at where they save their files. You know, where's your files? Well, they're in Word.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're not. They're in the folder you saved it into.
Right.
Well, I just go to Word and open it. Yeah, but when you saved it, you told it what folder to go in.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no idea where it is. We run into this all the time, you know, switching computers on people. Mac or Windows, same issue.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, where are my...
People are people.
Yeah. And what I think Microsoft knows this happens because in Word now, it'll show you the path of your file. Not just the name, it shows you the whole path.
Yep, yep.
Mm-hmm.
So where's my file?
Well, that they've done for a long time.
Yeah.
But it's people want something that's super simple,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's the whole point behind all these assistants.
Yeah.
What you want to be able to say is, open up that letter that I was writing to Aunt Mary last week. That's what people want.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I used to say, I don't need a secretary, I need a mother.
Yeah.
Well, that's the one nice thing about Google, though, especially with their photos. You can sit there and say, do a search on the photos, and it can find, if you say cars, and if you got a lot of pictures of cars, boom, it'll populate the screen with all the pictures with cars.
Yeah.
It knows.
We're used to seeing that in movies.
Yeah.
You know, open that file to Aunt Peggy, and it does.
And it does.
That's what Google
Assistant, which is the thing behind all of this stuff for Google, is working on. I've said this before. I gave the talk on this at Rochester Google's, and I said, white car. And it showed me all these white cars. And one of the guys said, ha-ha, that picture's a red car. I said, look through the red car to the car next to it.
There's a white
car. That's a white car. It does, you know, it makes some mistakes. I said at one point, show me pictures of my cat, and it showed one of the dog. It was a blurry picture, you know, the dog was moving when the picture...
It was an animal.
Right, it was an animal, took a picture of an animal, it didn't know if it was a dog or a cat.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Now, of course, I have nothing but a billion cat pictures now.
Oh, you got them finally.
We got two kittens this week.
Oh, he's been posting pictures.
Yeah, I've been posting them all over Facebook, kitty pictures.
They are adorable.
They are adorable. One is a gray tiger. The other one's an orange tiger. They're beautiful cats. The orange tiger's named Thor, and the gray tiger's named Bella. We did not name them. We inherited the names along with the cats. We call her Melty Bella because when she sleeps, she has no bones.
She
looks like a dolly clock. She sleeps with her head hanging over things. All the blood rushes to it. I don't know what that's about.
But even they're a better love story than Twilight.
Exactly. They're brother and sister, and it's a better love story than Twilight. But they're very cute cats, and they're very fun. But now I've got like 100 million pictures of cats. So when I go look for a cat picture, and I have to say orange tiger or gray tiger or black cat, you know, so it'll know which cat I'm talking about.
There was a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon this week where they're walking through the woods and Calvin yells, "Oh my God, a tiger!" And Hobbes goes, "What? Where?" Jumping up and not funny.
Right. What do the dogs think of the cats?
Where the dogs are gone. Sadly, we have no more dogs.
Oh.
Yeah. We have cats and alarms now instead of dogs. So what are you going to do? This is the first time we've had a cat that was not a black cat.
Hmm.
We've always had black cats.
Oh, really?
And now we have a gray tiger, sort of blackish.
Mm-hmm.
Blackish. And the orange tiger. So they're cute. They're very sweet. And I got, you know, I had exams to grade this week, but other than that, I didn't get much done this week because I was playing with cats all the time.
I got to admit, I'm not a big cat fan. I'm more of a dog fan. But my daughter, Melissa, the oldest daughter, has a Minx.
Yeah. A Manx.
And it's not like having a cat. It's got no tail. Doesn't really purr.
Right.
But it's as lovable as all hell. That's one cat, though. They call it Zoe. Zoe is the one cat, though, I'd actually take. Otherwise, I'm
I like
a dog.
Cats and dogs. We'll get dogs again, but not right at the moment.
I'm a dog person.
Yeah.
my two girls.
I love my cats. I love my dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew, my son, wants to get a dog. And so, you know, he's looking at moving into an apartment with his friends for college, and they want to get a dog. You're going to be at school all day long. Dogs are a lot of work.
Yeah.
Can we get a puppy now? No, we have cats now.
Right.
And you're at school all day. Dogs are a lot of work.
Well, not only are dogs a lot of work, but they're very social animals.
Yeah.
You know, when we get dogs, we get two.
Yep.
So they can keep each other company. And when we get cats, we get two.
That's the thing. If anything happened to either one of my two, I'd have to replace it with another.
Right.
Yeah.
It's important.
Because the one would be lost. Carrie would be lost if she lost her sister. Because she just sort of follows her sister around. And people always laugh because my two dogs, when they're out on the lawn, Kelsey, when certain trucks go by, she gets all excited. She's got to go chasing after. Carrie, since she's been a pup, is I got 20-foot leads, will sit there and grab a hold of Kelsey's lead in her mouth and try to pull her back. And folks sit there and say, did she do that? She's done it since a puppy.
Yeah.
I remember one time I caught Kelsey totally off guard because she got a hold of the lead and she just pulled back and Kelsey went right up in the air and down. She was just a little puppy. It's like, whoa. She's
Yeah.
They're fun.
I love my animals. They're very cool.
Unlike kids, they don't talk back.
They're starting to talk.
We have Persians.
Yeah, you have Persians. They talk. Persians and Siamese talk.
Yeah.
One of ours has squeaked a little bit. The other one, very quiet.
I mean, they talk and they're, I guess I shouldn't say talk, but they'll come up and let you know. I mean, in the morning, Kelsey's right up there.
When it's time to get up and let
them
out.
Yeah, that's the thing. Kelsey will come up in the morning. She knows what time I get up at 4. And she's right there, nose right in my face. The dogs are 12 years old. You'd think I'd learn by now.
Yeah.
It still startles the hell out of me.
Yeah, you're apparently not very trainable.
Evidently not.
Yeah, we had dogs. We had two very large German Shepherd mixes that would sleep in the bed with us. We also had a cat that would sleep in the bed with us, and the cat would leave me presents.
Yep.
We called them presents. I know the reality is she thinks I'm a lousy hunter, and she was trying to teach me how to hunt.
Yeah.
So she'd leave half a mouse on my pillow. Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Wake up to that in the morning.
One of the problems we run into with pets is that because they shed, that hair tends to get inside your computers.
Yep.
Clog up the fans, make them run hotter, and therefore
overheat
and die sooner. So, you know, take some vacuum cleaner, suck the dust out of your air. Yeah, suck the dust out of your computers. Spring cleaning, take your computer outside and blow it off. If you Dave's got the air hose, he blows them out with.
Right. Yeah. You got to be careful of static when you use a blower or a vacuum cleaner.
And with those compressed air cans, your first couple of spurts are always going to be decompressed water.
Right.
Well, that's like my line that I use for blowing out the computers. It has an inline filter.
Yep.
Because there's moisture in most air systems, you know, even with compressors and everything else. So it's essential that you have an inline filter to, you know, lock that out.
Ew.
Right.
That's a pain.
All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have Roy from Pittsford, New York on the line. Hi, Roy. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Getting ready for switching over to Windows 10.
Yeah.
Have a few questions in mind.
Sure. Always make sure you've cleaned the gun thoroughly before you fire it at the monitor.
Well, I'm afraid you're right. Is there a program that I can check my apps to see if they're going to run in Windows 10, or do I have to go to every manufacturer?
You got to go to every manufacturer.
Yeah, the Microsoft puts one out for their own products. But big deal, you're guaranteed that all theirs are going to work. But for other manufacturers, you have to go to each one and make sure that the version you have is compatible with Windows 10, or you'll have to upgrade.
Okay. Well, that's a lot of work. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Second has to do with backup. I think last week, and I think I heard this week, you were recommending Clonezilla.
Yeah.
I back up on a weekly basis, and I use the Microsoft backup and restore program.
Yep.
And it never asks me to close down Windows.
Because it's not backing up the operating system. It's only backing up your documents.
And there's some Windows system files it does back up, but it's not everything, and you can't do a full restore.
Right.
Hmm. Okay, well, it's not clear to me, because it says it's doing, files and operating system, something like that. You have a choice there.
Yeah. It's not, but trust me, the simple reality is when Windows is open, you cannot back up all the Windows files.
Yep.
You can't. It's not possible.
It backs up your system settings.
Right.
Not your system.
Well, it takes a long time because it runs about anywhere from 2 to 4 hours.
Yeah, it's not fast, and one of the things that it's backing up is your registry.
That could be.
And the registry is often enormous. It can be multiple gigabytes all by itself as junk builds up in it, because while Windows is very good at putting things into the registry, it never takes things out. If they're obsolete, it just marks them as unused. But it doesn't remove them. So you end up with a lot of junk in your registry.
So So CloneZilla takes care of all of that?
Well, CloneZilla is not going to lower the amount of space the registry takes. You need a registry cleaner to do that.
It
will back up everything on your system, because what happens is you boot from the CloneZilla CD.
Mm-hmm.
Well, DVD. You boot from the CloneZilla DVD.
USB drive.
Or USB drive or CD or whatever you're using. And that is now the running operating system, which means none of the Windows files on the hard drive are open, and therefore they can all be backed up.
Now, if you're backing up to an external hard drive, will you have access to that?
Yes.
Even though Windows isn't running?
Right. You will have access to what it, because Windows is not the only operating system that understands the concept of external drives.
But I don't think the Windows backup program is human readable. You have to use the Windows Restore program to get the files
for
back.
The Windows Restore, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So it backs it up as one giant lump on your hard drive, and you can't go into it and pull out one single file.
Right. CloneZilla.
But CloneZilla would do that.
Right.
And Cobian Backup is the other one we talked about last week.
Right.
So CloneZilla, how do you access CloneZilla?
We have a link on our website that's probably off the front page by now, but you would just...
CloneZilla.org.
CloneZilla.org.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
That's it then, I guess.
Sure. There you go. Yeah.
There's a couple commercial programs that were like that. True Image from Acronos, which I think is still around. Norton Ghost was popular for a very long time, but Symantec killed it because it was so popular.
And it worked great.
Yeah. A lot of times what I've seen is when you buy...
I wonder if you have an old version. It should still work.
You would think.
Because it's doing is copying files. I mean, it doesn't matter what operating system it's ghosting over. All it cares about that it's doing, you know, from one hard drive to another.
Yep. I mean, a lot of times when you buy a retail external hard drive, not a raw drive, just a retail box, a hard drive box, it'll come with a backup program because they know that's what you
That's what you're buying it for. Yeah.
In fact, Western Digital has their MyBook line, which I'm pretty sure comes with a backup program. And
it may not be a cloner.
Problem,
it may just be a backup.
Right, it's just a backup file, yeah. One thing we've seen, it's very frustrating. The Western Digital external hard drives often come in a plastic case, especially the MyBook series. And we see those enclosures dying all the time.
Right. It's not the hard drive.
Western Digital hard drives are great.
Yeah,
their external enclosures are crap.
Yeah, it's the enclosure, not the hard drive. Because I've had a couple of folks... You know, bring me those enclosures, and they're dead.
And
I've just had to put them over into another enclosure, and they work fine.
A lot of times what I think it is it's the mini and micro USB connectors. And now the USB 3 connector is so small that it's so easy to damage when you're plugging it in and out. And I've even seen the weight of the cable will pull the connector out of the socket.
Yeah.
The old USB-A was a nice, big, hard connector, and it stuck in there good.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. No, I don't know why they went to that, because like you say,
and they're trying to miniaturize everything, you know. Take a look at Apple. They're making it so thin now. They want to take out the headphone jack.
I hope we go to USB-C, cuz that eventually a lot of products are now coming out with USB-C. It's a reversible connector, which is nice. So it doesn't matter which way you plug it in. And it's
they got to make
pretty
it a little
good. It's pretty
beefier.
Good size.
Yeah, it's
so
got to be a little beefier. Like you said, that's the issue though right now, because it doesn't take much, especially if you've got it set in somewheres, and if it happens to fall off the table.
Yeah,
just that falling off can bend that cable enough to break that little connector inside that it damages it, and then you can't get to the drive.
And that's why we're surprised at Apple that they had that MagSafe connector for
what a
forever.
Great thing that was.
And the new MacBook 12-inch with the USB-C connector doesn't use MagSafe.
Well, because
it's
MagSafe costs money.
Right. When they
and
went
it's
from,
too big.
When they went from MagSafe to MagSafe 2, the MagSafe 2 is a lot thinner and wider, so of course you need an adapter to run your old devices. But now the 12-inch MacBook is so thin that there's just no room for that connector. I hear this a lot too, that I wouldn't mind if it's 2 or 3 millimeters thicker if it gives me another couple hours of battery life.
Maybe a couple more ports.
Yeah.
I blame this all on Nick, and I can only
it's
say
my fault.
That I've drank the Kool-Aid enough that I only have one word, Google.
Yeah.
I don't worry about backing up.
The new Chromebooks are using USB-C also.
I mean, all my photos are up there on Google. So it doesn't matter, you know, and I was showing this to folks. oh yeah, here's my phone. And I pulled up the Google Photos. Boom, there's every one of my photos. If I need a document, boom, it's there. And then in the other Google storage, because they give you the free storage there, I back up my Quicken file.
Yep.
That's, other than that, my documents, spreadsheets, everything else is up there in Google. I don't have to worry about backing it. You know, I back it up, but I don't have to worry about this hard drive, the connector and everything else, or, you know, this and that. It's just up there, and it doesn't matter what device I'm on. I could be on my computer at home. I could be on my phone, or if I take my tablet with me, it doesn't matter. I can get it at all.
Yep. I am now honestly using my main computer mostly as a backup for a lot of the websites that I'm running.
Mm-hmm.
I back them up to that every night, so I've got a second copy, and then I back it up to a third place and a fourth place. And then I zip it up and put it up on Google Drive, and I have it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not using it so much as a desktop. I do everything in Chrome.
Like I say, I've found it so easy to break away from my desktop unit and use the Chromebook.
Yep, yep. And of course, if you save things in the Google's format, they don't take up space. So I've got tens of thousands of documents up there that take up no space.
I'm going to have to see what version of Chromebook mine is.
They may not. That's the big problem. I'm going to have to buy a new one to run the... because I was an early adopter, all the Chromebooks that I have are too old to run the apps.
Mine's maybe 3-4 months old.
It might. Microsoft has, Google has a document that says what models will run the apps when they come out over the summer.
All right, Steve, we got to try to find that link. Because I know a number of folks are going to be asking now.
It's on Ask Nick at the moment. Hold on.
Because I know, so many folks listen to us now, and I've had other folks come into the shop and say, now, and I've been able to show them my Chromebook. And they walk away thinking, all right, I got to go test drive one. And I tell them go to the various stores, and try one out, because a lot of them have, at least one there. And I said, just don't think you have to stick to that one, because usually it's a smaller screen.
Right.
And, you definitely, at least with my age and that, and a lot of folks, though, they want a little bit bigger screen. 15-inch is great, and it's not heavy at all. It's a very light machine thing. The only folks who, I don't like white. You know what? My computing doesn't really care what color the unit is.
Yeah, right.
I open
it. Well, this one's silver. I have one that's green.
Yeah, mine is white, and it works great.
Right.
So, I'm not going to sit there and worry about trivial little stuff like that. But, I had somebody else asking about taking an old computer and converting it to a Chromebook, and I was telling them how we had a link up there for that program.
Yep.
I'm going to have to check that out, because I really don't want to go to Windows 10, especially since now they said after July I have to pay for it. And all I'm doing is surfing. And that's what it boils down to. A lot of folks, you ask them, what do you do? Well, I got to be able to surf, and I want to edit photos. And they go through it. Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, but how much are you going to charge me for the apps? They're free.
Right.
They're free. What? They just can't get over that concept. And like you say, a lot of folks are very hesitant in making change. Yep. They just are so complacent. It's just like some folks are being told. Again, I had somebody at work say, well, they told me I had to use Windows Explorer. Frontier was, I think, telling them, or somebody was telling them, one of them, no, you got to use Internet Explorer. I go, no, you don't.
All right.
I says, it'll work with anyone's. Well, the tech told me I had to use it. No.
If you want to ask them a question, you have to use it.
Right. But there's only one program that requires Internet Explorer, and that's the web version of Skype.
Or Windows Update.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Windows Update, yes.
Yeah. Other than that, you can use any browser, and I love Chrome.
Right, right.
It's just easy to use.
Well, what's interesting is the people who come to Rochester Googles, of course, are maybe predisposed to this, but a lot of them are buying Chromebooks, and they come back the next month and they say, I'm missing something. What are you missing? It's too easy. What am I missing?
Yeah.
No, you're not missing anything.
Now, is there a way on the, I didn't find it, that you can turn, you know, when you open it up, turn off the password?
Yeah, everybody asked that question. I don't know that you can do that. Here's what I did do, though.
And you don't want to do that.
You really don't want to do that, but here's what I did.
Yeah, but it sits in my house.
You can attach it to your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So you turn on Bluetooth on your phone, you turn Bluetooth on your computer,
mm-hmm.
and then you hook the two of them up. And anytime you open the Chromebook and your phone is nearby,
mm-hmm.
it takes a couple of seconds to sync up, but then you just click on your picture and it opens up.
Oh, okay.
So when I'm using it, for example, just when we started the show, I opened it up, I waited about 5-7 seconds for it to sync up,
yep.
and I clicked on my picture and opened up. But if you stole it and opened it up, you would be presented with the password.
Right. And that's why Windows and Mac in the last couple of versions or so are now defaulting to requiring a password. They're not auto-logging into the account.
Right.
Because if anyone happens to sit down at your computer, they have access to all your stuff.
Exactly.
And so,
right.
You know, you're at a coffee shop and you run up to get a refill. Someone sits down to your computer, installs a program or turns on file sharing or looks at your email while you happen to be away for a moment. So that login password and a screensaver password. So when your screensaver kicks on, most systems now will ask for a password to get back in.
Right.
It's so easy for the bad guys to steal your stuff. Don't make it any easier.
Right. And people say, well, it never leaves the house. Well, you know what? Do people come to your house? And the reality is they're not letting you bypass it anyway. So learn your password. Get over it.
Well, yeah, no, I use the password on mine. It's no big deal, but I was just wondering.
Yeah, again, you can make it so that it will.
I knew you said something. I couldn't just remember how to.
Yeah.
And that would be easy. Like you say, that's still keeping this the unit safe and, you know, with my phone.
Right, right.
This is an interesting one. There's a story in Time about a pill that you swallow. And that's your biometric sensor to log into Chromebook.
Oh, interesting. The problem is you're going to eventually not have that.
Yeah.
In your body again. I'm trying to be delicate about this.
Maybe it stays.
This too passes within 24 hours.
That's exactly right. You can chip yourself, or you can just attach it to your phone. If your phone's on you, anytime my phone is on me, my Chromebooks open up automatically.
I may have too many. I can't get into Time because I don't have the paywall. That may be why I can't see it.
All right. All right, that music tells me you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But don't worry, you'll get another chance to do it again. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. This is Soundbites, and this is the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a few minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Dave from Canandaigua, New York on the line. Welcome, Dave. What's up?
Well, it's just another Saturday out here in paradise.
Yay. Oh, I thought you were in Canada. I'm sorry. Yes. Another day in paradise. Exactly. Right.
My 10-second cat story. I woke up one morning and put my foot in my slipper.
Oh, yeah.
Something poked me in the toe.
Yep.
I took it off and rolled out a little mouse's head.
No.
I couldn't spend enough time in the shower after that, nor could I get the water hot enough. That's funny.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway.
At least it was a mouse and not... not a used mouse.
And of course, the cat's sitting there going, I was saving that. Yeah.
I think he was actually snickering.
Teach you to put me outside in the cold.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what's up, Dave?
Well, I still marvel at how everyone raves about how great Google Chrome is.
Yeah.
However, I've discovered an offshoot of it that actually passes the test of usefulness.
Yeah?
It's called SlimJet. It actually has the left-hand bookmark sidebar available.
SlimJet?
Yep.
It's a browser?
Yeah, it's made from the same engine as Chrome.
Oh, yeah.
And, it's got the, just like in Firefox, it's got all the bookmarks over on the left-hand side, the cascading menu.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes it actually usable.
Yeah.
In my opinion. So I thought I'd throw that out there because there's got to be other people who may have a lot of bookmarks. I mean, a lot of bookmarks.
Yeah.
And the other program I ran across is called Nynite. And what it is, if you end up rebuilding your system a lot, which happens for me for various reasons, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, free downloads that are out there. Well, you go to this website and you just pick off. They've got, you know, browsers and this and that. And it basically installs all those onto your system all in one go.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's pretty kind of slick.
I'm looking at it right now. Very interesting. Very cool. Pick the apps you want, and up they come.
Nynite.com, I think it is.
Yeah, Nynite.
Yep. That and SlimJet. Those are my contributions for today.
Those are both good contributions. Thanks.
Sure. Have a good one.
Excellent. You too. Have fun. Everybody likes to use their systems just a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to have those available.
Oh, one other thing that we should mention, though, because we're talking a lot about the Chromebooks. And somebody was asking me about the Chrome boxes.
Right.
So if you don't want just, you know, a laptop, you still like to have your big screen, you know, to look at and everything else, you can get a Chrome box that does the same thing, hooks up, and it's still just a Chrome operating system. Because I think more and more folks are getting a little ticked because now as of July 31st, they're going to have to pay for Windows 10.
Free for a year wasn't good enough.
And what I couldn't quote the price again. What they were saying that...
About $120 bucks for
that's
Windows
what I
Home.
That's what
$120 bucks for Windows Home, $200 bucks for Windows Pro.
And unless you need a net, you're going to be on a server. Home is fine.
Right.
And if you need Windows Pro, your company is probably already paying for it.
Exactly. I didn't get to say this before Dave hung up, but there are extensions you can add to Chrome. Tidy sidebar, bookmark side panel, sidecar bookmark sidebar, simple bookmarks, and a bunch of others that will give you that bookmark bar down the side.
Mm.
So you can have that in Chrome if that's what you want.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, the Chromebooks are the laptop models. And the Chrome boxes mm-hmm. are the desktop models. And they come with either just a little box, and they're essentially hockey puck size.
Yeah.
And you hook up your own monitor, mouse, keyboard. Or they come as an all-in-one where it's built into the monitor itself, and then you just have to hook up a keyboard and a mouse. And then you can get the 21-inch monitor, whatever it is. Of course, those are more expensive because you're paying for a large monitor.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd be paying for a large monitor anyway if you didn't already have one.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
The nice thing about a Chrome box is that you can just use whatever monitor, mouse, and keyboard you may have lying about. A friend of mine did that. He bought a Chromebook, fell in love with it, rarely used his desktop, but then wanted, you know, when he's home, he wants something bigger. His desktop died. So instead of buying, you know, another $1,000 Windows computer, he bought a $200 Chromebox, and now does everything he needs to do and is very happy using the same monitor, mouse, and keyboard that he used to have on his desktop machine.
That's one of the advantages of the modular system is you can replace each piece of it. We're seeing more and more companies making all-in-ones, which can often be less expensive. And it really cuts down on the cable clutter, too. So the computer is basically in the monitor, and you just plug in a keyboard or mouse, or wireless keyboard and mouse as well.
Problem with wireless keyboards and mice are the fact that you have to keep replacing the batteries.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We have, and how many times have people come to us and said, oh, my mouse is broken.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just need to replace the batteries.
Battery.
Yeah.
The
batteries. There's a battery in the mouse? Yep. Yeah, if it's wireless, there's a battery in it.
Or the battery's in backwards.
Or the battery's in backwards, or you turned it off.
You didn't know there's a power
on the bottom.
Yeah,
like at least once a week, we get someone who doesn't know there's a power button.
Yep.
And because I don't know, they turned it on when they first bought the computer, and then 6 months later, when they have to replace the battery, they forgot there's a power button.
Right. I've also had folks still sit there and forget. You know, they don't use them as often.
Yep.
Leave it in. They had cheap batteries in it,
And they leak.
Yeah, and they leak. So I've had to pull them out, and I've got contact cleaner. I've sprayed it with the contact cleaner. That cleans up the corrosion, that type of
stuff. If you're lucky, it hasn't corroded the cheap metal connectors.
Yeah. Yes, because if those break off, you're hosed.
One of the problems we see a lot, too, is with laptops. Someone will throw their mouse in their laptop. The mouse will go to sleep when it's not being used to conserve battery. But when it's bouncing around in your laptop, it thinks it's being used. And so, you know, the next morning, your battery's dead because you just carried it, you know, across
town. Because people don't take that second to flip it over and turn it off.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Sherry from Chi-Li, New York. Hiya, Sherry, what's up?
Hi, can you tell me how I can cast my, or your radio station to my Chromecast audio?
Okay, you have Chromecast audio and it works for other things, yes?
Right.
Okay, so you just need to know how to cast the thing. What you need to do is you can see in your upper right corner there the little cast icon, yes?
Right.
Okay, what you need to do is start playing the channel on your browser. Go to Listen Live on the Jazz 90.1 site.
Well, every time I do that, it... you know, it has some kind of link that you have to play in a media player.
The very bottom one, dial up. No, that's now it's an M3U also. One of them used to be an M3P.
Yeah, it's always
M3U. Hold on a second. Let me bring it up right here in front of me while we're talking here.
Yeah.
Most
of the browsers have a media player built in, or you can use something like VLC and then cast it from there.
Well, I haven't been able to do it. I don't know. I've been searching for weeks because I was trying to play what you're doing right now on my radio, you know?
And you're using the Chrome browser?
Well, I can't figure out how to do that. I mean, you know, I get the browser up, and I see the cast button, but, you know, I can't figure out when I'm in Jazz 90.1 how to get to that.
In the upper right corner, there's that Listen Live.
Yeah, but every time I do that, it takes me to that M3U thing.
And that plays right inside my browser. I'm in in Chrome.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'm doing something wrong, because it always, I don't know, something about you need a media player to do this and what have you.
Oh, shoot. Safari plays it internally. Chrome downloads the M3U file.
Oh, it's Chrome.
All right. Here's something else you can try. I want to say not iTunes.
Well, iTunes will do it, or VLC will do it.
TuneIn Radio, that's
it. TuneIn Radio.
TuneIn Radio.
There is a program that should be part of your Chromecast. If not, you can install it from the Play Store called TuneIn Radio.
Okay, let me write this down. TuneIn Radio.
Right. And the Jazz 90.1 station is in TuneIn Radio. So if you go to the Chromecast, start TuneIn Radio, then start the Jazz 90.1 station.
Or go to TuneIn.com and play it there.
Or TuneIn.com and play it there. It should work fine.
All right, I'll try that.
Yeah, and you can install the app, and once you've installed the app, you then go in through that and load the Jazz 90.1 station, make it a favorite so it's easier to get to, of course.
Okay, I'm not doing this on my phone, you know, I'm doing this on a...
No, on the Chromecast, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
It's a little painful, of course, with the clicker.
Yeah.
Right, and I get that. But once you've done it and you've made it a favorite, then it's a matter of click on iTunes Radio, click on the Let's Play This, and you're there.
Well, it's a touch screen, so...
Oh, yeah, easier then. You win. Yeah, absolutely.
With a pen, so...
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try that. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Have fun. Yeah. It's, it depends. Of course, it also depends on how new your Chromecast is. If you've got the oldest version of the Chromecast, it may not take.
Well, she said Chromecast Audio, so that's the brand newest one.
That's the brand newest
one. In fact,
one,
what's
so
the difference?
Work.
Why would you get Chromecast Audio for $35 when you can get Chromecast Audio and Video for $35?
Better speaker? I don't know, because the speaker is, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because it's two products.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you just only want audio on that.
I guess
that
you only want audio.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hey, what just happened there? Okay. Sorry, I was confused by my computer. Our next caller is Don from Greece, New York. Welcome, Don. What's up?
Hi, how are you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
Enjoying your show.
That's what I like to hear.
In my Windows temp file or folder, I have a file that is it varies to what the initial part of the file reads, but it has a double extension, a temp, a .temp.exe.
Ooh.
And of course, I think every antivirus software is going to see that double extension and flag it.
Yep.
But I think that this is actually part of Google Docs. Not able to prove that.
There is a temp.exe Trojan horse file. What happens when you try to delete it?
Well, you can't delete it. I have to go to safe mode and delete it. And I'm successful at doing that. But when my machine starts up and I start up Google Docs automatically, the temp.exe reappears.
That's very weird.
And have you tried running your antivirus?
Actually, I boot up with malware and I do the root check first because I'm scared to death of rootkits.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the one I do first, and it finds it, and it says it corrects it, but I go in, and I still see the file.
Okay,
the
problem with rootkits is that they are rootkits, and what that means is they run before anything else and protect themselves from being removed. So while you can find a rootkit when you're running Windows, you cannot remove a rootkit when you're running Windows. The rootkits have the same problem that cloning your hard drive has.
Gotcha.
So you either need to take it to somebody or run a program like, it to somebody.
Yeah.
Take it to somebody and have them do it.
If you can boot another disk in that computer to scan your first disk.
Normally, I usually take the drive out, put it on the bench, and run it from there.
Gotcha. So, actually, blowing the drive off, low formatting it, and reinstalling, do you think that would get it?
Well, that'll...
It might. Yeah. 99% possible, sure. Yeah. There is a rootkit remover for McAfee. There's one for Malwarebytes. But again, you have to be a little more savvy to use it. So I tend to tell people Bitdefender has one. I might suggest that you take it to a reputable vendor and have them take a look at it.
Super. Thanks for your help, gentlemen.
You're welcome.
Yep. Good luck.
Great day.
You
there,
too.
There is ClamWin Portable, which is a version of the Clam AV that's designed to run from a USB drive.
That should do it.
I just found a bunch of them. Sophos has one. EMI sub. Looks like most of the AV companies have programs that run from USBs. Then they can scan your main hard drive.
Right. So you'll post that, and that'll help as well. All right. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. It is Sound Bites. It is the member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. So on Thursday, two very important things happened. We don't have anybody waiting in line, do we? No. Okay. On Thursday, two very important things happened for the future of the PC.
I had to stop
as we know it. That's we all did. It's one of those Saturdays. First, for the first time ever, low-cost Google Chromebook laptops outsold Apple's Macs during the most recent quarter. Manufacturers including Dell, Lenovo, HP sold over 2 million Google-powered Chromebooks combined versus about 1.76 million Macs. Second, those same Google Chromebooks are getting full access to Android's Google Play Store, opening the door for those laptops to run a significant portion of the 1.5 million Android apps out in the wild. For Apple, it's not necessarily great news, but it's not the end of the world either. Quarter after quarter, Macs have shown sales growth, bucking the overall shrinkage of the PC industry, and Apple's always been a company that's content to completely and profitably own a small piece of a much larger pie. But for Microsoft, it means the pressure is on. Google's slow but steady attack is bearing some real results, and it's not great news for Windows 10. The key concept of the Chromebook is simplicity and portability. These devices run Google's mega-lightweight Chrome OS, which is little more than a web browser. That works fine, given that the vast majority of stuff that most people do on computers is based around the browser anyhow. That limitation becomes a strength, too, because so little data are stored locally, it means nothing is lost if you break or lose a Chromebook. It's all in the cloud no matter what, and because the technical requirements for running a browser are so low, you still get reasonable performance even from a sub-$200 laptop. That combination of low cost and resiliency is an offer that lots of schools especially can't refuse. Chromebooks continue to see their strongest growth in the education space, followed by the at-home particularly older market. Add Android apps to that mix and it gets even better. Android is the most popular operating system in the world. Any software today is likely going to be available on Android, the web, or both. It means that for Chromebooks, and indeed any Chrome OS device, there's basically nothing you won't be able to do. Google is basically taking its wildly successful smartphone operating system and smashing it together with the Chrome OS to make it a more useful desktop operating system. Microsoft is taking the opposite tack with Windows. With its Universal Windows Platform Initiative, Microsoft is trying to convince developers, mainly the new breed of smartphone app developers, to bring their services to Windows 10 and its Windows Store. It's basically trying to take its existing lead in desktop operating systems and extend it down to the things that people are actually using, their phones. They've had some success at attracting big names like Uber, Facebook, and Hulu, but Windows 10 just doesn't have the same thriving ecosystem of, say, Google's Android. Thanks to Microsoft's lack of presence in the smartphone world, many developers would rather focus their efforts on iOS and Android. For now, that's fine. Windows 10 still runs on all of the old-school Windows software that consumers and businesses are used to, and you can still use your web apps. Increasingly, though, the next generation of great stuff is being written for the smartphone or for the web because that's where the customers are. It's a future that Chromebook will be uniquely well-positioned to take advantage of with that all-important community of Android app developers plus the mega-popular Chrome web browser. So are Chromebooks looking more tempting to you? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-79004. 1-5.
Yeah, I think Microsoft is really sweating it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they are too.
And one of the things too is the fact that so many of these devices being sold are not what we would traditionally call computers.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I can see the desktop still being held true, you know, in businesses. But as far as home base, oh no. Chrome is.
Well, and I know a number of small businesses that have all gone over to Chromebooks.
Yeah.
Their people don't need more. They get somebody to write a back-end web app to run whatever they need to do, you know, sales or whatever it happens to be. That's all being done that way anyway now.
Yep.
So that being said, why do you need to have a whole Windows computer? Why are you paying $200 for Windows when you could pay $200 for the whole laptop?
Right.
Right? And get everything that you need. It's a very tough sell now for...
And it eliminates, and even, getting spyware, malware, yeah, and viruses.
And even most businesses are using Microsoft Office. We're making Word documents. We're making PowerPoint sheets. You don't need a big computer for that anyway.
You don't need a computer for that. Right. You can do it either in Google Docs, or you can do it in Live Online, yep, and still and use that through the Chromebook.
And share it with everybody.
Because that's the way we've always done it.
Well, that's exactly right. What we've always done cost us a bucket load of cash, and we're going to spend that again.
And our Microsoft sales rep tells us we need to.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas new small companies are saying, you know what, if we can do this all for $200 a pop, why am I spending more?
Yeah.
Right.
And again, worrying about, you know,
and when it breaks, you throw away my new one.
I was saying.
Right?
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I tell people all the time, when I go on a trip, I only ever take a Chromebook, because if I lose it, all I've lost is a couple of $100.
Yeah.
All my stuff is in the cloud. Everything I'm doing is safe and secure. I'm done. I don't need anything more.
That's why I told you. I don't worry about it now because everything is up there.
Yep.
And I don't have to worry about my backups and everything else. So there's a lot of photos, very precious photos for me.
Yep.
Up there that, you know, I would.
Oh, I back everything up, but it's still all up there.
Yeah, but I worry about, like you say, you know, CDs and everything else. That stuff can still fail. You know, and like I say, some of these photos, if the hard drive failed in it, I would be very upset.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're up there now, and I don't have to worry about it. It took me some time, but I did it, and I'm good to go.
Yep, it's all good now. Mm-hmm. All right, to the phones. Steve from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm going to have to get your answers offline because I'm at work. I have two questions for you.
Yeah.
Windows 10 Task Manager used to have a function where you could shut down the computer, restart it. I mean, and I don't see that on the Windows 10 Task Manager anymore.
Right.
And I have a Chromebook question. I use a lot of Roadrunner hotspots. They're very handy to have.
Yeah.
Can you still use those with your Chromebook?
Yep.
You have to install a profile.
Yeah. What'll happen? Okay. First, whether you want to stay on the line or you want to hang up, because these are both simple answers.
Well, I will hang on as long as I can.
Okay. Here's the deal. Let's start with Windows 10. The function to restart is gone from the Task Manager because now it's part of the Start button. If you open up the Start button in the lower right, you will see Power, and if you click on that, you can shut down, restart, or whatever the third choice is.
But you always used to be able to do that.
What?
Didn't you always used to be able to do that?
Right, but it's gone now from the Task Manager, and that's the only place you can do it.
Okay.
The other thing in terms of Chromebooks, back when I had Roadrunner, I used Time Warner's hotspots. They worked perfectly. The first time you do it, you have to log in, and the Chromebook will remember that for you. So I used to be able to go everywhere that Time Warner had a hotspot and still be able to... log in. So that was easy and fast and worked perfectly. In fact, I know people who are paying for the low end of Time Warner's cable, $15 a month or whatever it is, just so they can get access to the hotspots. They never plug it in at home.
Ah.
Nice.
Because if you're running one of those hotspot things from like Verizon,
yeah,
it's like $15 a minute.
Yeah.
You know? And these things are 15, but I think it's 15. I think it is. $14.99, yeah, $15 a month. So much cheaper, much easier. And as you've seen, they're in an awful lot of places. Not the fastest. And you got to be careful about security.
VPN works there.
Right, right, right. But, yeah, and, you know, just generally, they certainly work. You know, and if the choice is nothing or slow and worry about security, pick slow and worry about security.
Yep. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Sorry you're at work, but have fun.
So am I.
Bye. Bye.
I just saw an episode of Security Now where they were talking about this tiny hardware firewall.com. It's the size of a keychain dongle, and it's a USB Wi-Fi hotspot that creates a Wi-Fi network that then you hook your computer to. And then you hook that Wi-Fi network to your public Wi-Fi at your coffee shop, your hotel, your bookstore, whatever. And it has VPN built in and Tor built in.
And wow.
It's $35 for the hardware itself. Or if you want a year of VPN service, it's $90.
What's it called? Tiny what?
Tinyhardwarefirewall.com.
Wow.
They also have a an Ethernet version that's a little bit bigger. It's about the size of a deck of cards. But it's an amazing little thing for especially for business travelers who are on the go all the time. You never want to do any serious or sensitive work on a public hotspot. And so this gives you a VPN service. And if you really want, you can do Tor over VPN.
Very, 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 very cool. Very clever idea. $35. $30. And the other one comes with a $35 external antenna, so you get a better signal. Tiny, nice looking little thing. Steve's going to put a link on the...
You can roll your own with like a Raspberry Pi.
Right.
But this is, it's a slick, self-contained little box.
For $35, how do you beat that?
Yep.
You know, how do you beat that? So, very nice, very clever idea. For those of you who worry about security, that will help. You still have to be careful.
Yep.
There's no magic bullet. You still have to be careful. But it certainly will work. All right. Our next caller is Howard from Irondequoit, New York. Howard, what's up?
Hey, hi, Nick. I called the other week about the security tango.
Yeah.
I was having trouble with the PowerShell.
Yeah.
And I went online. I got the programs, but I could not download the Aura Kill or the TDSS Killer. My program kept saying that it's a virus and it wouldn't let me download it.
Oh, yeah. Some programs, what a couple of those programs do, of course, is they have virus signatures built into them so they can search for viruses. And some programs see those as viruses. So you have a choice of either not running them or turning off your antivirus for the time that you're downloading and running them.
And a lot of times you'll see that recommendation on installers turning, temporarily turn off. Got me doing it now.
Yeah, see?
Temporarily turn off your antivirus while you're installing this, because installing a file in your computer is what a virus does. But when you want to install a real file in your computer, the virus checker has to figure out which is real and which is bad.
Right, and many of the lower end antivirus programs don't allow you to whitelist something. You know, some of the higher end ones will have a whitelist. Yeah. So you can whitelist it and say, you know, our kill is always fine or whatever. But some of the others you can't do that with.
Okay. But it is. So if I make some kind of arrangements to get our kill on there and TDSS killer, those are good files.
Yeah, those are good files. If you follow the links in the Security Tango, those are real links to real files.
Okay. Thank you much, and I'll try that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Good day.
Thanks. Again, what's going on here, for those of you who don't know, is Howard is running something we call the Security Tango. There's a version for Windows and Linux and the Mac and Android and iPhone, and it will help you to make sure your system is clean. And that it is also not only clean, but free in the future from bad stuff. Oops. There it is. Thank you. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Dennis. What's up?
Hi, guys. I got a question for Steve. I've got an iPhone 4S running iOS 8. And... Never did much with my pictures before, but now I found out after I downloaded my photos to my desktop computer, the pictures are huge. I try to photo edit them, and they come out looking lousy. What do I do?
What photo editor are you using?
I was using a couple of different Microsoft photo editors.
What often happens is when you take a picture with a digital camera, including the phone, it's in a compression format called JPEG. Which is a lossy format, throwing away stuff it doesn't think you'll miss. If you open that file with a editor and then save it back as a JPEG, it throws away even more information. So when you do your saving, actually before that, while you're editing the picture, you want to edit the pixel dimensions to make the picture smaller.
Okay.
And then when you save it, you can choose whether you want to save it small, which is low quality, or if you want to save it a high quality, which is a larger file size.
Okay.
And so what happens is every time you recompress the file, you lose more and more information.
Okay. Why is the picture so large? It's like 34 inches by something by 40-something inches.
Inches doesn't matter. It's pixels. So when the camera takes the picture, it's 10 megapixels. When you display it at 72 pixels per inch, it might be huge. If you display it at 300 pixels per inch, it's small.
Okay, when you say display it, I'm not sure exactly. I didn't know I had a choice of, when I open up the photo editor and I click image and it says size and it's in inches.
Right, it's in inches based on how many pixels per inch you're displaying it at.
Okay, I can change the how many pixels per inch I'm displaying it at?
Depending on which program you're using. UrfanView is probably one of the better... You're running Windows, right?
Yeah, Windows 7.
Yeah, UrfanView is one of the very good picture editors for Windows. There's also GIMP, which runs on most platforms as well. But generally, so what happens is when you look at something on screen, it's usually 72 pixels per inch.
Okay.
When you print something, it's 300 or 600 or 1200 pixels per inch. And so it's the resolution you view the picture at is independent from the resolution you print the picture at.
Okay.
So whatever program you're using to view that picture is viewing it at 72 pixels per inch. And so if you have 1,000 pixels, suddenly it's going to be, 15 inches wide. Or if it's more pixels, then it's going to be even bigger. So it's the program you're viewing it with. It's not necessarily the file itself.
Okay, is that FNView or whatever you call it? On Soundbites or
yes.
Not? On the
yes, we'll put up a link shortly. Got to take a break.
Thank you.
Yep, back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, U41 Minutes After the Hour, Soundbites, Member Sport, Jazz 9.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Kurt from Palmyra on the line. Hiya, Kurt. What's up? Kurt?
Big show as always, guys. It's Bert.
Oh, not Bert Kate. From Caledonia. Well, I wasn't even close, was I?
Close enough. What the heck? I'm finally going to pick up a laptop, and I like to use Linux exclusively. I know you guys recommend Chromebook.
I love Linux. I use Linux at home. That's my desktop and one of my laptops.
Yeah. And what I like to do is have two partitions. One with I use Debian as my workhorse, but I like to play with all the new OSs that Linux people come up with all the
sure.
time. And I was just wondering, thinking back on Windows 8, I think it was, that made it almost impossible to wipe Windows off. Is
yep.
10 like that?
Yep. 10 is worse.
Great.
It's a definite issue. Microsoft is intent on being the only operating system on your laptop. Linux is getting better at the UEFI business.
I mean, yeah. What I would suggest if you have another computer, or if you can take it to a friend, take that hard drive out, take it over to them that they can use it as a slave drive and just do a low-level format.
Okay.
That way it's just,
Even booting.
He wants to boot. He wants to dual boot.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't catch that part. I was still busy.
Yeah. He wants to dual boot. So the real question is, dual boot Windows 10 and some operating system, Ubuntu, whatever it might happen to be. And it is doable.
But not easy.
It is not easy. There's a link that Steve can put up. I just did a search for dual boot Windows 10 and Ubuntu.
I remember Windows 8.1. They kind of responded to the objections about that, and there was a workaround that wasn't too bad.
Right, and it's basically the same one. If you are not using UEFI, which is the Unified Extensible Firmware Interface, if you're not using UEFI, then it's easy because you're just using a basic BIOS. But if you are using UEFI, then there are some things you have to do in order to dual boot, and there's a starting with backing up Windows 10. But then create a USB drive with Ubuntu on it and shrink the partition for, you know, it's all of that stuff.
Right.
But it is certainly doable, and you have to pay attention when you do it to what the menus say, because every manufacturer has a slightly different version of UEFI. And so when you boot it up, the menu options may not look exactly like the ones on the website.
Okay.
So you have to be a little careful, but the reality is that it is doable. You just have to be very careful when you're doing it.
Gotcha. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Burr, good luck.
Have a good one.
You too. I'm famous for taking old laptops and putting Linux on them, but now I'm starting to put Neverware Cloud Ready on them, which turns them into Chromebooks. So those are kind of fun. I've been having a lot of fun doing that with old laptops for people, and that's easy and simple. All right, our next caller is Judy from Rochester, New York. Hi, Judy, what's up?
Well, I have a HP 8500 printer that keeps going offline. And when I Googled the problem, there are several different options out there to try. I've tried a couple of them, but they say it's a problem with Windows 10. Can you help me?
Is it the printer itself saying it's offline, or is it the Windows print window? The print queue window saying it's offline.
The print queue, I'm assuming, because when I go to print something, on the screen will say printer is offline, and so then I have to go up to where the printer is and reboot it, and then it goes back.
Does the printer itself say it's offline or give an error message on the printer screen?
Yes.
What's that error?
I don't know. I don't remember. You would ask me that. I just happened to catch it this afternoon, and I thought, let me call and see if there's an easy fix.
Is this is this wireless or wired?
Wireless.
Wireless.
Sometimes if you change the sleep setting. So what happens is printers will go to sleep, so they don't use a lot of electricity. But when they're supposed to wake up again when you say print, but sometimes they don't wake up completely, and sometimes they don't rejoin the network again.
Does this happen regularly?
Yes.
And does it happen after a specific amount of time, like after an hour?
After a couple of days, usually.
There you go. Here's the deal. What happens is there are two ways you can connect a printer, a wireless printer, through the HP software. One is by IP address, and the other is by host name.
Okay.
All right. When you connect them by IP address, every couple of days, the printer gets a different IP name, gets a different IP. And so you may lose, it renews its IP connection, and it may get a different IP address, and so you may lose the connection. If you go by host name, then what happens is you have the same constant host name no matter what the IP address is. So the computer itself will go out on the network and say, where's HP 8500? And it'll answer back and say, I'm here now. And then you can print. So that works. So what you have to do, and Steve's got a link to that. It's the very last reply on that page. What you have to do is remove the printer, add it back, and when you do, you have two choices. One is the printer IP address, and the other is with a host name. Select the one with the host name, and it should work fine after that.
Okay, and we'll try that this evening.
Yep, let us know next week.
Okay, thank you.
If it doesn't work, don't call back.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Yeah, it's a the other thing, of course, to remember, and I'm sure she's still listening. The other thing to note is make sure you have upgraded to the latest driver from HP. If she upgraded the mm-hmm. machine from 8 or 7
yeah.
to 10, the driver itself just may be the old driver.
Yep.
Microsoft doesn't make every driver. Other places make their own drivers. Generic. And some of them are just generic and don't work right. So before you do anything else, go up to the website for HP, look for your specific printer number model, and then download.
They make it so easy, yeah.
Yeah, they make it real easy.
And they will tell you, yeah, and they will tell you what versions of Windows that particular driver that you're downloading will work with.
Right. So make sure you get the one for Windows 10,
mm-hmm.
and that should work. And then when you do. And I'm sure what it will say is remove the printer driver
mm-hmm.
and then reinstall it. And when you do this time, instead of picking by address, pick by name.
Yep.
And that should do it. That's generally the way the internet works in anyway. You send a name and the system says, I don't know the name, but I've got a server that will translate the name to an IP address for me. So it says, okay, here's the name. Where is this?
Mm-hmm.
And it says, oh, it's here, so that they get together.
Yep.
But if you just give it an IP address, it skips that step and goes right to that place. So if the IP address is now different, which it will be after a couple of days, now you cannot connect to that printer mm-hmm. any longer.
It forgets.
You because it's moved, mm-hmm. essentially.
It changed its address.
It changed the address.
It changed its address without filling out a change of address form.
Exactly. Whereas if you go by name, then it always works. Think of it as a postman in a small town, and you send an address to 25 Main Street, and it's going to go to 25 Main Street no matter who lives there. And if the building is gone, then they don't know what to do with it. But if you send it to Mary Smith, the postmaster will go, oh, Mary moved from 25 Main Street to 32 Main Street. I'll just take it to her. So that's kind of how that works. And so you want to be very careful to always try to do things by name rather than by IP address.
And
I know there's 50 of you going, that's not how IP works. The domain name server should give it the same address every time. Yeah, it should. Doesn't always. Get over it. And so
You people, set a static IP for your printer and then be done with it.
And be done with it. Exactly. Never have to worry about it again. But for the people who don't set a static IP and for the people whose systems don't set a static IP.
Or don't know what a static IP is.
Right. Then you want to use the host name. All right. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Those of you who did not get on the air, please call earlier next week. We only have 2 hours. But we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we'll be back in just 166 hours with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.